I'm Christopher Lydon on the way to the farming village of Kwabeng in the eastern region of Ghana. It's going home for my friend, the poet and teacher, Kwaju Opoku Ajumong, and for me, it's an introduction to the traditional sort of community where most Ghanaians, most Africans still live. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we usually say. On the road, call it a global conversation with American and African attitudes interacting. Kwaju Opoku Ajumong, we're on the road now to your mother's place, the town where you grew up, the village of Kwabeng. And I want to know, where's the village in your own head today as a citizen of the world? What's the village part of you still?
The village Kwabeng means so many things to me. As I sit here today in the car, I am made up of so many things. All the things I have done, all the places I have been, the people I have met, the things I have tried to do, the students who have passed through my hands, whose life I have shared. But at the bottom of all of it is the town where I was born and where I grew up, where my belly button is buried. And that's where we are going today. This is the town I grew up, and the fondest memories of my life are there. It is where I knew my first and perhaps deepest love. I grew up with my grandmother, and everybody who knows me knows that she was my first love. This was a woman who meant everything to me. And I think her greatest legacy to me and my life and the lives of my children is the stories she told. I've already talked about some of her stories, but my favorite among all of them is a type of the folktale that I later came to understand when I became a student of folklore as the dilemma tale. These are stories of such weight and density because they explain the most profound things about life by asking very simple questions. Let me give you an example. There was once a king who did not have any children, which was not really that tragic in the community where he lived, because this was a matrifocal society and the line passes through the woman.
So he didn't matter anyway.
He didn't matter that much. The real problem was that none of his two sisters had children. So there was no nephew or niece to become the head of the community after he died. And so the king, therefore, caused an announcement to be made in the town to the effect that he would make king or queen after himself, the one person in the community who can bring him what he called the most precious thing. But he did not define what this precious thing was. And so a lot of people tried and failed to satisfy him until one day, three sisters walked to the king's palace and declared themselves candidates. And the man said, fine, I give you 1 year to find me the most precious thing. And these three sisters gathered at the outskirts of the town before they separated and agreed to meet in the same spot after 1 year. The first sister went to South Africa and apprenticed herself to a magician. And at the end of her 1 year's stay, this powerful magician gave her a magic mirror. And in this magic mirror, she could see anything, anywhere on earth at any time. A second sister went to Senegal, apprenticed herself to a powerful griot. And at the end of the year, this man gave her an amulet, which she wore on her arm. And it was so powerful, it could transport her and others to any place on earth in an instant. The third sister went to Boston, and she apprenticed herself to a medical doctor who had won 2 Nobel Prizes, a very powerful doctor. And when she was leaving, this man gave her a magic potion, a potion so powerful that it could cure any and all diseases. So at the end of the 1 year, the three sisters gathered at the outskirts of the town, and they were comparing notes, each one claiming to have the precious thing this king wanted. And as they were talking among themselves, debating the comparative value of each, the first one looked in her mirror and discovered that the king was sick, about to die, on his deathbed, actually. The second sister immediately said, "Come with me." And she immediately transported all three of them to the dying king's bedside. And the third sister from Boston went to work and cured him. So now the king is back in health. But he has a problem. Of the three sisters, who brought him the most precious gift? And there we were, 5 years old, 6 years old, and we were asked to answer this. What would you say? Which would you choose? And why? So we debated this problem for a very long time. And finally, we gave up and asked our grandmother what the answer was. And she laughed. And she said, "But how do you choose among knowledge, strength, and skill?" You see, this is a type of the folk tale that is called the dilemma tale. And it serves a number of teaching functions. Among them, it teaches that young child how to think critically about problems, about moral and ethical problems. It also teaches them to defend their views, because whatever answer you gave, whichever choice you made, her next question always was, why? And you have to defend your answer among your peers. But more interestingly, what such a story will teach you is you'll be hearing different answers from different people among your peers. And it teaches you that you don't always have to have the right answer by yourself. If you hear a better one, there's nothing wrong with abandoning yours and taking that one. So the child learns to absorb knowledge from others and not to cling without logic because the answer emanated from him or her.
Kwaju, we're going to meet your mother. I wish we were going to meet your grandmother, but on to Kwabeng. But let me ask one question before we go. I'm fascinated by just the village in the Ghanaian imagination. In India, Gandhi always said India was a nation of villages. Nehru said the same thing into the 60s. That notion seems to have been abandoned in India. I wonder, does it have any legs in Africa? Does anybody in Ghana speak of this as a nation of villages to be cherished, to be preserved, to be revived?
I think the problem of development is really a big one. And it has remained as intractable as it has because I think the urban areas always take from the village and do not put enough back in the village. And so the village remains progressively deprived for that reason. There is always a sucking away of resources from the village. We take away the raw materials to the city. The relationship between the developed countries and the developing countries is duplicated within the developing countries themselves. And so there is always a drawing away of resources from the countryside to the city. And so if ways can be found to reverse this, the benefits will be so profound, because it seems to me that there is a bedrock of homegrown sense that comes out of the soil among those people in the villages that perhaps has been lost in the city. This, of course, calls for a redistribution of resources and how we go about understanding what development is.
Next stop is a development committee inside the village of Kwabeng and the NGO that the town elders have formed among themselves to keep their village vital. Let's go. We get to Kwabeng at mid-afternoon in late January on a road that's dusty with Ghana's red clay soil. It looks as if it's been cooked. The name Kwabeng turns out to mean the forest that was cooked red.
It's a place very famous for its gold. When I was young, the women would pan for gold after rain in the streets.
This feels like a community space, a town hall or something?
It is a meeting place, as far as I know, for the Kwabeng Development Foundation. It's an NGO they recently formed.
When beautiful, cool, ventilated space for a lot of handsome men to gather and gab.
I'm saying you are telling them they are handsome people and that they are not as big and fat as us Americans. They laughed.
Tell them my job is to go around listening to interesting people like you.
Okay.
And them.
I see Najuma Oya Potin, and they say, Otukwain, they want me to express that they welcome you. And they thank you very much that you have come to share their joys, their hopes and dreams.
Amen. Thank you. Tell them it is a joy to be here. They're beautiful people in a beautiful village, and I'm honored. Praise God for Kwabeng, for these people.
Okay. Temati. I don't need to translate that. They understand. It pleases them that you are here, and it is their hope that you will be able to take online the hopes and aspirations they have for this town, its development, and its future.
Kojo, would you ask them, what's Kwabeng going through? What is Ghana going through? What are they going through?
Our life is good. But there are certain things that draw us back. The major difficulty they are having is in relation with health. Education is a concern. And also things that need to be done to make farming successful, because these are farmers.
They will do it by themselves, but of course, but I wonder, what can other people do to be of help? Or should we simply get out of the way?
As someone, Obisane say, God brought you here. And we know you will do all you can to help us. The truth is, if you look at our numbers, we are more than 10,000 in the town. We don't have a hospital here to take care of them. When someone falls ill, sometimes you lose the person on the way to finding help. For that reason, we have succeeded in forming an NGO so that through our own effort and the help of others, so that we can build this hospital. It is now generally understood that government by itself is not capable of solving the problems of life for everybody, that we need to depend on ourselves. I mean, projects like this have to start with us. We have to make our effort. We have to make the first effort. And your being here, it is as if the government of America is here. So we thank you in the name of God.
We should pray that the government of America does not come here with those flying machines bullets and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
And yet, may I say, the people of America adore Ghana for many, many reasons, not least Louis Armstrong, Kwame Nkrumah, the soccer team that defeated
Nigeria
the other day. Yes. We wish you well in Angola against Egypt, and we admire your people, Kofi Annan.
I'm America for Wangani Jigana for Humpad.
Thank you so much. Ghanaians are exquisite people, every single one of them.
No, can you say Unya Enka Obepe Hoba Hawaware Nawahaka? I'm telling them it's beginning to look to me like we should find you a woman so you stay.
We are a small state here in Kwabe. We don't have an FM. And if you could, you could open up a radio station here to compete with the BBC or whatever.
That's a great idea. Let's do it. Let's start the Kwabeng radio station. That and the tractor will be ready for business. What will we talk about on the radio?
Most of the people here are farmers. So we can educate them in farming.
The environment, how to sustain it. We sensitize the people that they should be in a position to sustain the environment. They shouldn't destroy it.
Yeah.
If such a campaign is launched, greater people will take, and it will give employment to a lot of people over here. Tree planting, exercises, and others.
Could I ask you, what's the main medical problem?
The water body, the main water over here. It has been destroyed by mining activities.
Clean water, number one.
Yes. Then we use the same water also to cook for domestic purposes. And since it has been tempered, we destroyed it. The people are also finding it difficult to do their house chores.
Malaria, typhus, HIV.
They are all over here. They are very, very rampant in the area. If you go to the hospital now, we have a minor clinic here. The data which will be shown to you, you'll be sorry. You'll be worried. And the people are really not feeling fine over here at all.
Would you say, is this a peaceful community?
It is.
Yes.
It's very, very peaceful.
That's a great gift. It's a great blessing. to have a peaceful community.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a blessing.
It's a blessing.
We live in peace.
Yeah.
Do you have any Cuban doctors here?
We don't have it, but a professor has promised to bring us some Cuban doctors weekly, at every weekend.
Do you ever see American doctors? So many Ghanaian doctors come to America, but how about American doctors coming to Ghana?
No.
We don't see them.
That's why we want to ask, why are they not coming to, why are the American doctors not coming to help Ghana?
Well, maybe they will. Let me ask, in the world, I call it the age of Obama. What do you expect from President Obama?
It's a fine question.
If Obama can send some American doctors to Etiwa district to help us, it will be very pleased. Yes.
And if he's able to assist us to build a hospital, then we shall be very, very pleased. Because there is no hospital here. We have, it's our brother. Once Obama hails from America, Africa, we like him. We like Obama. Obama is our friend. He is our son. He is our friend. He is everything to Ghanaians.
And why do you laugh? Why do you laugh when I mention his name?
Well, you see, the first time to visit Africa, he came to Ghana. And this was a controversy between Nigerians, the big powers in Africa. Why should he come to Ghana? So that's why we laugh when we hear Obama. It rings that we are struggling with some people passing to
us. He came to Ghana because you have the best soccer team.
Okay, then we thank God for that.
Thank you for receiving me.
You're welcome.
And good luck. Peace. Peace and prosperity all around.
Thank you so much.
Kwaju Opugu Ajumang, at every level I'm impressed by your village. By the NGO that's thinking about development, by the Council of Elders sitting around their regent, waiting the approval of a new king. Extraordinarily diversified, smart, interesting, alert, responsible body of farmers. I was hugely impressed. I was hugely impressed by your mother and your brother, himself a farmer, and your sister who cooked this dinner. If I were a young Ghanaian, I'd want to have part of my investment in that future.
I agree with you, Chris. There is an important history there, and there is also a great future. I think the greatest achievement of the Council of Elders is this sense of confidence that they seem to have imposed on the problems of the town. They do not see themselves as passive recipients of largesse, the goodwill of others.
These men talked about very concrete issues, especially health, education, and clean water. They know what they're talking about. They're farmers, very practical men, also dressed in traditional robes. One of them is a successful hotel keeper. They send their kids to university. They're well aware of the world and Barack Obama and the whole modern scientific cosmos. And yet, they have a real identity, real concern about that place.
Yes, Chris. The most fascinating thing about this Council of Elders, I find, is the seriousness with which they have defined and confronted the problems of the town. If you take clean water, for example, Kwabing is a place endowed with gold. Surface gold mining is possible in that area and has been for as long as I can remember. My grandmother used to keep a pot filled with gold dust under her bed. And when things got real bad, one day I walked back to my town and I asked my mom, "Where is the pot?" And she said, "Oh, it's gone." They had sold it. A few years ago, there was an attempt by a gold mining company to do modern mining in the town, which we all thought was good. But unfortunately, the project caused the drinking water of the town to become contaminated. So they have a real problem. The second thing they talked about, education traditionally has been the main means of moving up. And so every parent is concerned. I try to help with admissions into the university by helping the students to understand what subjects they need to take in order to qualify.
I noticed what, 2, 3, 4 kids yes. came up to you while you were there, just happening by, yes. and they've got an admissions problem, they want some help, some
That's
advice.
Right.
That's very encouraging.
That's right. They showed me the results of their common entrance exams, and I tried to help them to determine what subject combinations will be appropriate for the courses they took. But I think the real answer to the problem has to do with finding the means to sharpen the minds of the kids at a younger age. And that is to target the primary schools. So over the past 5 years, what we have done along with the NGO has been to build a school library, a place where the children could gather after school, do their homework under supervision, and also find the time to do reading for enjoyment in order to build a reading habit. And so about 5 years ago, we started a library project. And one of my American students from Michigan got interested in it. And she did a book drive. And she got us over 15,000 books and shipped them under her own steam. And with that, we were able to start a full library for the children. Now the children have a resource center, and we are hoping that it will be able to raise the standard for them. Now, there's a personal story to this. I got interested in the library because one day the king asked me the question about what I think I can do to help the town. And as he spoke, I remembered from my own childhood in the town, I was about 5 years old, going on 6 in the primary school. I remembered that in school, every Tuesday and Thursday, there was a mobile library van that brought us books. We did not have a library in the town, but the government started this project of having vans moving from village to village, from school to school, handing out books, which the kids returned twice in the week for new books. And it was the most exciting period in my childhood when the van drove up and you lined up, you queued in front of the bus, and the headmistress would hand out the books. And these were new children's books with hard pages. And when you opened the book, it was so new you could smell it. And that smell stayed with me. So when the chief asked me about what we could do to help, I said, oh, we need to build a library. The answer was very easy.
They also know they need a doctor, and they're counting on their influential friend, Kwajo, that's you, to help them get one of those Cuban doctors, at least once in a weekend. At the same time, Kwajo, I'm going to remember this village is a very, very happy place, entirely safe, familiar, people are respectful, nobody's starving, nobody's getting rich, But the farmers are hard at work and they're thinking in a modern, intelligent way about how to do it better. There are a lot of worse places to live on this earth than in Kwabeng, in the eastern region of Ghana. It's a huge pleasure to see a little bit more of your Ghana as we go. Kwadwo Opoku Ajumong, thank you, and we will continue the conversation.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's been such a great pleasure to talk with you.
Paul McCarthy edited this conversation with Kwadwo Opoku Ajumong, whose essays and poems are collected in the paperback Cape Coast Castle. Feedback on village living, on Africa's past and future, and whatever else moves you about Ghana at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thank you for joining the conversation.